Okay, so I'm going to talk about some recent work, and some old work actually as well, on low Reynolds number turbulence, a transitional regime turbulence. Some of this was motivated by trying to understand the phenomenon of turbulent drag reduction in polymer solutions, but I'd like to think there are some interesting things about Newtonian flows as well. So, Rob Poole stole this slide from me to use in the conference 2 weeks ago. But just as a little bit of motivation, if you add a small amount of long-chain polymer to fluid, you can reduce the drag in the turbulent regime very substantially. The most famous example of this is the Alaska pipeline, but if you just Google drag-reducing additive, then you'll come up with all sorts of companies that will sell you these things. So they're different formulations. There are things for aqueous fluids and organics. These drag-reducing additives are used all over the oil industry. Okay. So let me leave it at that. So they're very useful, and there's some interesting phenomenology associated with them. So let me just say a few words about that. This is just a conventional friction factor versus Reynolds number plot. So laminar flow is here, smooth pipe turbulent flow of a Newtonian fluid is here. And then there's a huge set of data from various authors. And these are, you know, different pipes, different materials. Everything's different about all these. But what's really interesting is that they all fall, with some scatter, onto the same curve. And in particular, you'll never, with dilute polymer solutions, you never get below this curve. Okay, you'd like to be down here. That would be laminar. All right? And that's called the maximum drag reduction asymptote. So that's one of the really interesting things about drag reduction in polymer solutions. And you can see as the Reynolds number goes up, these two curves get further and further apart. So you're getting more and more drag reduction relative to Newtonian turbulent flow. It turns out that this gets limited for any given material. This gets limited because long-chain polymers break in flow. The covalent bonds that hold them together will break into a first approximation. If you break the polymer in half, its relaxation time goes down by a factor of 4. And so you rapidly lose the ability of the chains to lead to drag reduction. Yes, Mike?
So where are you, where's the Alaska pipeline on this curve?
Where is the Alaska number? That's a great question. I actually don't know the answer. Crude is very viscous, but the Alaska pipeline is very big. So I actually don't know off the top of my head what it is. It's probably order 10 to the 5th. That would be a guess. So one interesting thing to note is that you see this behavior even down close to the laminar turbulent transition. So it's not a high Reynolds number phenomenon. It's a high Weisenberg number phenomenon. I'll describe the Weisenberg number shortly. So this is just bulk properties. If you go in and look at the velocity profile near the wall, if it were Newtonian, you would end up on the von Karman curve here. Slope of about 2.5. I should have checked whether that's consistent. Where's Joe?
Joe's gone.
Okay, so he gave the history of that number, and I don't know if that's actually the current value.
It is 2.1 decimal place.
It is. Okay. The interesting thing about polymers is that to a first approximation, there's another log law that was first observed by Virk, but if you actually start putting a bunch of data around that, there's a fair amount of scatter. So the data is below it at low Reynolds numbers and goes, or low distances from the wall, and goes above it if you're at higher Reynolds number, higher distance from the wall.
So Virk is the solid line in the middle there?
Virk is the solid line in the middle here.
Okay.
Yeah, these two curves are the 95% confidence intervals on the values that he derived, that he got from data. And what's interesting is that at low Reynolds numbers, the data tends to go along the lower the lower edge of this confidence interval. And then when you get to higher Reynolds numbers, it tends to hit the top, the upper one. So there's actually a bit of an S curve there. All right.
So, can I ask a silly question? So momentum is increased relative to Newtonian flows far from the wall.
Well, this is all in wall units, right? So everything has to collapse near the wall.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about, and you know, the flow is shear dominated near the wall. Mm-hmm. And you only really get polymer stretching. Actually, the max in polymer stretching from what we see is 12 wall units from the wall. So there, you start to see deviations there. So that's just some phenomenology. And so in the long term, these are things that we would be interested in being able to have a fundamental understanding of. In terms of structure, these are just snapshots. These are from Lee's simulations, which are quite old now. Lee graduated from my group 7 years ago. So this is a Newtonian simulation, and you've got the green is an isosurface of streamwise velocity, and the red are vortex cores. And what you see is that when you go to a substantial level of drag reduction, you see much, much less in the way of strong streamwise vortices. You see much less three-dimensionality. It's nearly two-dimensional, nearly streamwise invariant structures here. Okay? All right, so those are just some observations. I want to talk a little bit about polymer dynamics, just because this isn't a polymer dynamics audience. So the polymers that work well as drag reducers are very long linear polymers, okay? At equilibrium, a long linear polymer dissolved in a liquid has conformations that are basically random walks along the chain's backbone. So that's what they'll look like at equilibrium, all right? We can characterize the contour length, so that would be the fully extended length of the chain. That's L. And the radius of gyration, which is the moment of inertia of the chain in the equilibrium conformation. And the characteristic of long flexible chains is that the contour length is much larger than the radius of gyration. Okay, if you had a stiff molecule, those two things would be close together. But for long chains, they're not. Each chain has a characteristic relaxation time, which in terms of scaling, you can just think of the relaxation time as the time for the chain to diffuse its own size. Okay, just as a ballpark figure. All right, and then from the point of view of flow, one of the key important parameters is the Weisenberg number, which is the product of relaxation time and some strain rate in the flow. Usually, this is taken to be the wall shear rate, because you know that, if you know the wall shear stress. Okay. So if the Weisenberg number is small, then the chains have time to relax before the fluid deforms them very much. there's another parameter, the elasticity parameter, which is just the ratio of Weisenberg number and Reynolds numbers. One important thing that's to understand about dilute polymer solutions is that in shear flow, you just have simple shear, the polymers have a very weak effect on the viscosity, on the shear stress in the flow. Okay? So this the zero shear viscosity changes just like sort of like the dilute solution result in a suspension. All right, so the change in shear viscosity is proportional to the effective volume fraction of the suspension, which is really very, very small, okay, at the levels of polymer which begin to be interesting. All right. Extensional flow is a very different story. So imagine you take a simple, just a blob of fluid and stretch it between your thumb and forefinger. That's an extensional flow. In this flow, the chains don't tumble, they just stretch. And you can generate a lot more elastic stress or polymer stress in an extensional flow than a shear flow. So the magic of polymer drag reduction is that these polymers have very little contribution to the shear viscosity. And beta here is the ratio of the solvent viscosity to the total viscosity. So 1 minus beta is the contribution to the shear viscosity. All right. What I've defined here is the extensibility number. This is the maximum value of the so-called Troughton ratio, which is just the relationship between the ratio between the extensional viscosities of the polymer solution and the solvent. So even though this number, 1 minus beta, can be very small, here we still have 1 minus beta, because that's the concentration, basically, of chains. But now you have the ratio between the fully extended length of the chain and the radius of gyration of the chain. That quantity can be enormous for a flexible polymer molecule. So this quantity can be much less than 1. It's about 0.03 in most of our simulations. This number can be 100 or 1,000. Okay? So that's the distinction. The important distinction is between the behavior of polymers in shear flows and extensional flows. Turbulent flows are extensional. Okay, if you look at the stretching of material lines in a turbulent flow, it's exponentially fast. So they're extensional flows. It's the Lyapunov exponents. There's a positive Lyapunov exponent on every trajectory in a turbulent velocity field. Okay. All right. So that's a little background. All right. So what I want to talk about. We'll talk about some work in minimal channels. And I think this gives us, so there's some interesting things related to other things that have been done by people in this room. Looking at minimal channels helps us to understand a little bit about the interaction between the polymers and the turbulence. So we have a little toy theory that we developed for part of that story. And then that gives some hints as to what the state space structure is and how it's affected by polymers. And then I'm going to talk, so there's some invariant states that are involved in that story. And then the last part of the talk, I want to talk about going from small domains to big domains. Right? This is a big topic of interest for us in this community, and I'll spend a little bit of time on it. Okay? So right, we've got, oops, I had this backward. You weren't supposed to see Marilyn Monroe yet, but anyway. So all right, there's our minimal channels. There's real channels. And that reminded me of Andy Warhol's pictures of Marilyn. So. All right. Very quickly, we use John's code, channel flow. Lee wrote a viscoelastic version of it, and that's what we use. We do minimal channels. I'm sad to see that Javier isn't here, because I'm going to cite him several times. Most of the talk will be minimal channels. Okay, where minimal for the viscoelastic cases is actually somewhat larger than minimal for the Newtonian case. All right, I don't think I need to say anything more about that. If you really want to know about models, molecularly based models for polymers, I can talk to you about that. The basic idea is that we can coarse grain a polymer chain into a bead spring dumbbell, write Langevin equations for each of those beads. And then from that, we can get a closed form evolution equation for the stress tensor. All right. Okay. So here are some observations. This is in a minimal channel. And so there's basically two sets of observations. Historically, we did it this way. So we have some observations in viscoelastic flow. This is just a space-time plot of the wall shear stress at a certain streamwise position in the flow. And what we observed was that there were these regions, fairly long regions, where the flow would be relatively quiescent. Not laminar, but fairly weak. And we called those, we needed a term, so we called those hibernation regions. And then everything else we called active. And so what we observed is that we very frequently saw these so-called hibernation regions in viscoelastic flow. And if you looked at the local mean velocity profile, the area average but not time average mean velocity profile, that profile would hop back and forth from close to the classical Newtonian profile up to close to the Virk profile. This is just the log. Sorry, I lost the labels here. This is the log-loss slope So this is 2.5, this is 11.7.
Sorry. Is that the Walsh stress averaged on over the two walls or at only one wall?
This is a time series of the wall shear stress average over one wall. The two walls may or may not be doing the same thing. These are low Reynolds numbers, so sometimes they're very closely coupled.
What is the Reynolds number?
Here's the Reynolds number right here. Friction Reynolds number of 85. What's that?
It's the same for the viscoelastic.
The same for the viscoelastic flux.
So are we sure it's not a swish from one wall to the other wall? Because that has been reported many times in the minimal flow unit.
It's not in this case. Actually, I'll show you a movie which maybe will help answer your question. Before I do that, let me see if there's anything else that I wanted to see. To show about this. I wanted to make the point that if you go back to the original minimal flow unit papers, they talk about what they called quiescent periods. So the Jimenez and Moen paper, the Hamilton Kim and Wolef paper, they both talk about these. Yeah.
This is constant RE, right? And RE tau.
These are at constant RE tau because we're holding pressure drop fixed. So we're holding wall shear stress fixed for these particular simulations. You can see this same. You can hold mass flux fixed as well, and there are actually good reasons to do that. But these simulations were done at constant delta P. Okay. So, So what happens during one of these hibernation periods? So what I've got, I'm going to show this movie a couple times. So, Johan, these are the instantaneous mean velocity profiles at both walls. And you can see, actually, they're in sync for this particular event. So this is wall shear stress. These are a constant delta P simulation. So if the wall shear stress goes down, to conserve momentum, the mean velocity has to go up. All right?
So, Mike, when you say mean, that's over X and Z?
X and Z. This is... so the bulk velocity, right, that's averaged across the cross-section. All the wall shear stresses, those would be averaged over the bottom and top. And these are separately averaged over the bottom and top. Those are wall shear stresses. Okay. So you have these regions where the instantaneous mean profile goes from close to von Karman to close to Virk. All right, let me just show that again. And then on the right... On your right, this is just a surface of constant streamwise velocity. These are vortex cores. So during this low drag region, the flow becomes very nearly streamwise invariant, but not completely, or it would laminarize, as we know. All right. And then at the end of this region, at the end of this interval, actually the polymers relax quite a bit during this because there's nothing really here to stretch them except the mean shear. Yes?
So the bulk velocity, is that then at just one y location?
No, that's just that's the mass flux.
Okay.
But since these are constant delta P, if the wall shear stress is going down, then the fluid has to accelerate. So that's why that's going up.
So is this a linear spring dump?
These are Feeney P.
Feeney
P.
And constant friction. They don't have.
Yeah, that's right. These are not fancy Feeney P. These are classical Feeney P. Correct. Yeah.
Red surfaces are vorticity.
What do we use here? Is this Q criterion or?
That's Q criterion.
Yeah. So these are vortex cores with that. All right. Okay. So that's what the velocity fields look like. And so there's a picture you can extract from those that you have this sort of temporally intermittent dynamics. You have this very active turbulence. The stretching of the polymer molecules goes up. It eventually gets that gets killed, and we actually kind of understand the interaction between near wall vortices and viscoelasticity now. In essence, the polymer chains stretch in the low speed streaks, and they get rolled into the streamwise vortices where they relax, and they actually generate a torque that tries to unroll the streamwise vortices and weaken them. Okay, and so you go to this weak flow, and in fact the drag reduction is high here, but the polymer stretch is low, so there's an anti-correlation between those two. And then eventually you go back, so you kind of intermittently go around this cycle. The plot in the middle here is just the joint PDF of polymer stretching versus the local, the log loss slope, which is a one measure of drag reduction. And what you can see is they're clearly anti-correlated. So there's an anti-correlation between stress and drag reduction. We made a little theory based for the time scales involved with this. And so the idea is the following. So if we take the stress at the beginning of an active interval to be low, and we'll take the stress to grow during those active intervals. All right? Roughly speaking, the stress will grow like this. So here S is just a scaling version of the stress. So the fluid is trying to stretch the polymer molecules. All right, sigma is the largest Lyapunov exponent for the velocity field. The factor of 2 is because stress goes as stretch squared. All right, but the polymers are trying to relax against the velocity field. Okay, so you might expect stretching that goes e to the 2 sigma minus 1 over Weisenberg number times time. Okay, and this will change sign when the Weisenberg number exceeds some critical value. All right.
Do you calculate the Lyapunov exponents with the polymers or for the Newtonians?
So we have done calculations of Lyapunov exponents for the Newtonians. So for the purposes of constructing a theory, we're going to say that the Lyapunov exponent here in the active regions is not affected by the polymer. And so let me finish this and then ask the question. I think maybe I'll answer it. All right. Okay. So what we hypothesize is that once the Weisenberg number exceeds this critical value, then the duration of these active intervals will be simply the time it takes for the polymer to get stretched to some threshold value. All right. And then the polymers will be exerting enough stress on the turbulence to cause it to collapse. All right. So if you take those hypotheses, plug them into this, and rearrange, so S sub T is just some threshold stress value. WIC will be that you can think of as a fitting parameter, because we don't know what the Lyapunov exponent is in this case. So in principle, you could compute it. And we've done that for some coherent states. But what this will tell you is that the time duration of an active interval should scale like that. All right. And then the really cool thing is that if you have a clever graduate student, that student will notice that if you change things around a little bit, that you can make this a linear function. All right. So the inverse duration of an active interval is a linear function of the inverse of the Weisenberg number. So you just plot those two quantities, and what you see is that there's a region where you get a beautiful straight line. So this model is working well. And where this straight line intersects here is 1 over the critical Weisenberg number, which is 17 in this case. All right. And so indirectly, that's telling you what the Lyapunov exponent is for the largest Lyapunov exponent is for the flow, which is about 0.04. Okay. Which is consistent with Lyapunov exponents that we've calculated for coherent states. So that's in units of the Walsh shear rate. So actually the exponential stretching rate is actually a lot smaller than the nominal linear shear rate of the wall. Okay. But it scales with it. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Lyapunov exponent you're talking about is those trajectories in the velocity.
Correct. This is not the Lyapunov exponent in state space. This is the Lyapunov exponent in the 3D in the fluid. Yes. This is just the Lagrangian material line stretching rate. That's what the Lyapunov exponent is here.
Is there enough mixing in the velocity field for there to be a sort of uniform average over the domain, or there are things with these states, there might be regions of high or low stretching
So we haven't directly calculated Lyapunov exponents for these flows. We have done that for some of the Wolef solutions. And there you see it's sort of a KAM type story there. There are vortex cores there where you don't see much stretching. But there's but if you pick a random point in the fluid, it's pretty likely it's gonna stretch out exponentially fast. And we have an old paper that has some more details on that. But people have looked at material line stretching rates in channel flow and homogeneous turbulence. There's one, for example, from Ghirmaji and Pope for homogeneous isotropic turbulence, where they found that the largest Lyapunov exponent was 0.15 divided by the Kolmogorov time. So if you take a nominal time scale in the flow, some fraction of that is the real stretching rate. Okay, did I say that clearly? All right, so we think we have some understanding of this stochastic cycle, at least in a crude sense. So I haven't said much about nonlinear dynamics yet, except for Lyapunov exponents. So the question then is, to what extent can we understand these dynamics in terms of coherent states and dynamical systems ideas, all right? So in other words, is there an underlying state space structure that's organizing the dynamics in the way that we see? So I'll say just a few words about coherent states and also about edge states, all right? So, this is work from Jason Park, where we found a bunch of exact coherent states. And I don't want to belabor the point, but we found one family, the so-called P4 family, that's kind of interesting because there's a parameter regime where the upper branch of P4 has a velocity profile that comes quite close to the von Karman profile. Right, this is a tiny domain, small Reynolds number, so you can't say there's a log law, but you can say that that curve is close to that one. All right, and the lower branch, there's a parameter regime where the mean velocity profile is close to the Virk asymptote, and this is a Newtonian calculation. All right, so this is kind of intriguing, and so we started thinking about the dynamics in the minimal channel with respect to this solution family, which is the gold family here. There's turning point here. There's an interesting bifurcation where you get a subharmonic solution, spatially subharmonic solution coming off there. Okay. And these are just the upper and lower branch states. These all have the symmetry of the hairpin. This particular family. There's certainly other families. So let me not talk about that one since I'm running low on time already. This is just a state space projection into wall shear stress, dissipation rate, and fluctuating kinetic energy. And the point is, here are these, here's the upper branch state, here are the two lower branches because there's a turning point there. And it's clear at least in this projection that the turbulent dynamics are organized around these states. And there are certainly more of these states, but it's clear that if you, maybe easier here, this is the joint PDF of dissipation and kinetic energy, and it's these three points are right along. Yeah, Mike.
So these are solutions you find by Newton searching in the Newtonian?
These are all Newtonian.
What if you do
Well, we've done a little bit of that in the past with the Wolefa solutions. We were limited by our tools in that case, whereas Tobias. So there's a version of channel flow now that's built in Lee's viscoelastic solver. And so a natural question is to go look directly at coherent states and how they're affected by viscoelasticity. We did something similar, though. We did edge tracking for viscoelastic and Newtonian states. And these are the mean velocity profiles for edge states, again at this Reynolds number. And the very interesting thing about that is that the edge states, the mean velocity profiles in the edge states are almost complete. Well, to the eye, the mean velocity profile is completely unaffected by the polymer in the Weisenberg number regime that we were computing it. And there's a reason, a physical reason for that. The edge states, all of us who've seen these, they're very weak structures. They're almost just the mean shear of the flow. You have very weak secondary vortices. The mean shear does not strongly stretch polymer molecules. Again, this is the difference between shear and extensional flows. Okay, so the polymers don't really care about the secondary flow structure that's self-sustaining the edge states. And if you look at the mean polymer stress, you can see that. So this is just the different Weisenberg numbers. This is stretch versus distance from, or stress versus, let's stretch versus distance from the wall. It goes up, but this is basically the profile from the mean shear. If you look at the YY and ZZ components of the stress, so this is the XY. No, that's the trace. The trace is mostly the XX, which is the first normal stress difference that comes from the mean shear. These are barely perturbed from equilibrium. So at equilibrium, the sum of these is 2. All right, these things are on a very different scale. So the lower branch states, the edge states, are very weakly affected by this elasticity. So what it seems like is that at least in this minimal channel case, the Weisenberg numbers we've been able to examine, that the drag reduction in this regime is an approach to the edge state. So the turbulence, the polymers are strongly affecting the active turbulence, the upper branch solutions, but not affecting the lower branch solutions much at all. Okay, so there's a crude version of that story. And so this is just a rough state space picture of what we think is going on in this case. So in the Newtonian case, at these Reynolds numbers, you have these excursions down toward the lower branch or the edge. And as the Weisenberg number exceeds this critical value, we start to see strong polymer stretching here. The dynamics don't live in this region anymore because the polymer is killing them. All right, and so you end up with the dynamics collapsing down toward these lower branch states. All right, so there's a hypothesis about drag reduction in the minimal channel.
So, excuse me.
Yes.
You're living near the edge state. Don't you have a leaky
delamina? That's an excellent point. So one issue with doing viscoelastic simulations, they can run for thousands and thousands of time units and then go laminar. So yeah, so here the box, the minimal box, gets quite a bit bigger. If you tried to do the simulation up here in the same box as here, you would just laminarize. But yes, that's absolutely true. You're more susceptible in the finite boxes to going laminar. Yeah. Okay, so that's all small domains. I'm going to spend a very small amount of time, because I don't want to run too much into Johan's time, on going from small domains to large domains. So we kind of know the picture for Newtonian turbulence in a minimal channel. And I think we know, to some extent, the picture for viscoelastic turbulence in a minimal channel. But nobody but us cares about minimal channels. All right? Everybody else cares about real turbulence. Okay. So to what extent is the minimal channel turbulence related to large domains? And at these low Reynolds numbers, you can ask a little bit more specific question, how is it related to laminar turbulent intermittency, or just in general intermittency, and that you see at transitional Reynolds numbers. Okay. So the way we're going to address that is to... wait a minute. That's bad. Just give me one sec. Come on. 30 minutes ago, this slide was perfect. All right, sorry. Okay. The point still holds. So we did a little image analysis on these on the data sets. You could say, well, let's look at the wall shear stress and see where it's low, see where it's high. The problem with that is even when you have very active turbulence, there are going to be low-speed streaks where the wall shear stress is low. So you have to come up with some method of lumping regions with similar behavior together. So we've done it two different ways. One was to come up with a detector function that was a combination of wall shear stress and then actually the gradient in Z away from the wall just to try to capture a little more of the streak behavior. Or the roll behavior. It turns out not to matter too much what you use for this detector function. So we use this, and we use a Gaussian filter to just smear things out a little bit. And I should acknowledge Tom Rizaki, who's used something similar for laminar turbulent patches in boundary layers. All right, and then what we can do is you get this pattern. And you could say, well, we'll look for where the stress or where this function is below some threshold. But I think what's better is some tools that have come from computer vision, which are clustering tools. And there you don't set explicit thresholds. You say, I want to divide my data set into three classes, low, medium, and high. And then you have an algorithm that decides which goes into what class. And there are a couple different kinds of algorithms like that. One's called k-means clustering. Another one is called Atsu's method. It turns out that these are different algorithms that maximize the same objective function. All right, so you can use either one. And the point is that then you can take a pattern here and split it up in some reasonably objective way. The only thing that's not objective here is that I decided three, high, medium, low. Okay. And then you can do some conditional averaging over what's going on in those regions. So these are three Reynolds numbers. Let's just talk about this one. You can see that things don't change very much. Let's look at the conditional mean velocity profile in the low drag regions. So there's a lot of data on here, but fortunately it mostly collapses. So here is, let's see, so the spatial averaging, so these regions here, these curves here, are the conditional mean profile in the low drag regions. And the dashed curve here is the mean profile for the lower branch coherent state at the same Reynolds number. And what you can see is up till you get to near the core, they're quantitatively the same. All right. And even when we go back and look at minimal channels, the behavior near the center isn't that close to the coherent states. There's always more dissipation at the center than the coherent states capture. And you see something similar at the other Reynolds numbers as well. Okay, so the mean profiles, at least, in these low drag regions look very similar to mean profiles that you get from exact coherent states. So that's kind of intriguing. And that actually comes back to why I was interested in Laurette's talk, where she had the map with the laminar state and then an upper and lower branch state, because in some sense what's going on in the low drag or the stripes, we actually see stripes at friction Reynolds number of 70, those stripes are close in some sense to lower branch coherent states, okay, at least with regard to the mean profile.
Excuse me. Yes. These plots, you're plotting each class with its own U tau, I guess.
We are plotting, that's correct. So then everything's designed to collapse here. That's an important point. Yeah, so we use the conditional U tau, for example, to plot these. Right. That's the only thing we really have control over. The local pressure drop, that's changing. Local flow rate through is changing, but we can always find out what the wall shear stress, average wall shear stress is. So it seems like that's the natural thing to...
I mean, how different are the different U tau? From the different classes?
So the wall shear stresses can differ by 10 or 15% in the between the conditional and unconditional. In fact, we have another sampling method, which Rob Poole used in experiments, where he had wall shear stress at one point. He didn't have access to a whole velocity field. He could measure wall shear stress at a point and then do LDV above it. And so then we use the U tau from those points. And the conclusion is the same. These conditional velocity fields, mean velocity fields, collapse onto one another. And again, in blue here, I'm sorry for the difference in color coding, the blue is the lower branch coherent state there. So at least with regard to mean properties, these low drag regions look very similar to low drag coherent states. And then the last thing I wanted to do is come back to the viscoelastic case, where what we saw in the minimal channel was that essentially the high drag regions got shorter and shorter in time, while the low drag regions more or less stayed similar. And so you can ask the question, does that kind of intermittency also happen in a spatiotemporal way in the large domains? And so we've done the same kind of thing here, but this was a different student, and she chose a different scheme for splitting up the regions. And I can, it turns out we've compared different schemes, and the results are very robust. But the punchline is that we see, actually, let me move to the next slide. Not that slide. So here, at low friction Reynolds number, so these are the regions where the drag is low, the light regions. As we go up in Weisenberg number, then you see these high drag regions shrinking. The low drag regions take over. They don't actually change very much. They just become a larger fraction of the spatiotemporal dynamics. As you go up in Reynolds number, these low drag regions sort of get they sort of get isolated. But then when you increase the Weisenberg number again, they get bigger again. So as you increase the Reynolds number, this intermittency starts to go away, which is what you expect, which is what other people see. But then if you increase the Weisenberg number, it comes back again. And so at least to some level, the temporal dynamics that we see in the minimal channel are mirrored in the spatiotemporal dynamics in the large channel. And with that, I will wrap up, and I still have a little bit of time for questions. And there's what's next. Lots of things are next if I can get the money. All right, that's it. Thank you. Robert.
So is there a simple physical reason why polymer would make it live more in the low drag region?
So let's come back to that. That's a great question. Come back to my little toy model here. So we come back to this, all right? So this is actually, this is one of Wolff's coherent states. And the plot here is of the polymer stress, trace of the polymer stress. And what you see very cleanly in this picture, which you can see in DNS too, but it's nice in the coherent states because they just sit there and let you look at them. Is you see there's a region of stretching near the wall. That's the shear near the wall. And then the rolls, the near wall vortices, bring the stretched polymers up into here, stretch them further, and then the polymers get rolled into the streamwise vortices here. And what happens in the streamwise vortices, you see the stress going down as you move into the streamwise vortex. Right? So if you just take the divergence of that, you're going to get a net polymer force that's exerted backward on the fluid. And so what the polymers are doing, the vortices are trying to do this, and the polymers are working against them. And so we can see that very clearly in the coherent states. Actually, Kamami and Suresh Kumar did some nice work where they looked at the polymer torque and saw exactly the same thing. And so this motion is strong in these regions. And so these are strongly stretching the polymers. The polymer is then killing the rolls. And then dropping you down to here, and these regions, they're almost simple shear. They're barely three-dimensional. And so the polymers relax just to whatever their stress would be in the mean shear, because the fluctuations away from that are so weak. All right? Now at higher Weisenberg numbers, you get closer to the maximum drag reduction, there's evidence that the polymers are actually feeding energy back into the turbulence here in a way that's not completely understood. So I'm not going to speculate on that.
So what?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the sensitivity to the details of the modeling of the polymer? So for example, the extensibility parameter in the model, or
yep.
constant friction or other things that would change the dynamics?
So we haven't looked at like a conformation-dependent friction model. I'll show you what the specific thing that we've done. I can find it here. So for example, if the extensibility number is big enough, the onset of drag reduction doesn't care about that, because that's the fully extended length, and the polymers don't, they don't get close to the fully extended length on average. So this is a study we did quite a while ago. Again, this was with the Walefa solution. So we looked at Fini P dumbbells and Fini chain models with excluded volume, hydrodynamic interaction, the whole schmeal. And we matched the contour length and the longest relaxation time. And this is just the trace of the polymer stress as a function of time, now following a fluid trajectory. And Fini P is the blue, and then we've got all these other chain models. And what you see, there's an initial transient here, but actually the results are quite similar. And I think the reason for that is because these flows are extensional on average, and Fini P is a pretty good model in an extensional flow.
Right. But the extensibility parameter is controversial in these models, I think.
Yes.
Some people think it should be small, some people think it should be huge.
Right. So,
and that changes.
So we'll get, if we make the extensibility parameter bigger, we'll get more drag reduction right away once the Weisenberg number exceeds the critical value. You still end up on the maximum drag reduction asymptote. So in the end, it doesn't matter a lot. I mean, and that's consistent with the experiments. Yeah, I'll go.
There has been all this talk, a few years ago about another state of turbulence, which is fully elastic.
Right.
It has nothing to do with kinetic energy,
right? Right.
Can you say something about that?
So we've worked on that problem. That's a very different problem. So there are instabilities in purely viscoelastic flow, so zero Reynolds numbers, no inertia, that are associated with streamline curvature. And actually, in one case, there's an analogy with the Rayleigh criterion. There's an elastic version of the Rayleigh criterion for stability of a flow with angular momentum gradients. That has to do with stress gradients. So those are dominated by very different phenomena. Paolo Oratia, who's talking sometime, has some really nice experiments on instabilities of viscoelastic flows in a straight channel, where they have to kick the polymers really hard, and then you get what appears to be a subcritical transition to elastic turbulence with no inertia at all.
I mean, that's different from this lower edge state.
That's correct. That's the mechanisms are very different for those.
How much energy is there in that edge state? How much energy is elastic and how much energy is there?
So in the cases, there's not much elastic energy except for what's in the mean shear. So you wouldn't call that fluctuating kinetic energy. That would be the most of the polymer stretching is coming from the mean flow. And in fact, that picture I showed with the edge state, we'll just come back to that. I can't answer your question in terms of energy.
Where'd it go? Because the kinetic energy there, the fluctuating kinetic energy, will also be as low because you are in a very mild.
That's right. I don't have those plots with me, but the fluctuating, it's exactly as you say, the fluctuating kinetic energy is very small because the deviations from the mean shear are very weak. So this axis here, I'm sorry this is all blurred, so that's the YY and ZZ components of the polymer stretching. Those are very close, so the equilibrium value of those would be, that sum would be 2. These are very close to 2 throughout the whole channel, which basically means that all the stretch is in the flow direction. So you're not getting much of a fluctuation away from that.
So it's all the shear.
It's all the shear. That's right.
All the shear is also in the mean flow.
That's right. Most of the exactly. So this quantity here is completely dominated by the mean flow. Yeah.
When you simulate a viscoelastic flow in the same channel where you simulate the Newtonian flow, does nothing happen at all, or the lifetimes are very short?
if you wanted to use a minimal Newtonian minimal channel, then you won't get that depends on your initial condition. The flow will laminarize. In a big channel, it's a different story. The last part, you know, my channels aren't big compared to Lorette's or Matt's. Where's Matt? But they're big compared to minimal. Even there, when you get to very high levels of drag reduction, you need to be careful. Because you can get, like I said earlier, you can get simulations that are run for 10,000 time units in there.
In the minimal channel of viscoelastic flow, when you get to this hibernation period, is everything in the channel is hibernating? Or
in the minimal channel, yes, everything is, yes. That's correct. In fact, there's a slide that I didn't show. So that's a bigger, this is a bigger channel, but still minimal. Yeah. And you see there's very weak streamwise vorticity. Ismail, you had a question?
So, they have this, in actual experiments, they find this non-monotonic behavior with Weisenberg number of, not the drag reduction, but how the Reynolds stress behaves and how the fluctuations behave. So, is this, and I guess for the audience, it's basically, you have this
little... I think about like the turbulent kinetic energy, so the XX component goes up.
Yeah, and then
It goes up and down. And the reason it goes up is because the polymers are suppressed. If you go look at the budgets, the polymers are suppressing the transport of kinetic energy from the flow direction into the transverse directions. So you end up having more kinetic energy left in the X component. So that's why this goes up. And that actually happens even with coherent states. And then eventually, the turbulent fluctuations get weak. All the turbulent fluctuations will get weaker. But the initial effect of the polymer is really to suppress the redistribution of energy from X into the other directions. And so that's the origin of that non-monotonic behavior. All right. Last question. Then the organizer is going to cut me off.
He won't really go up. I'm happy his point. So if you had a parameter plot with Weisenberg versus Reynolds, vertical axis Weisenberg, I mean, that's elastic turbulence if you go high enough. So
correct.
Over to the right and up is, polymer reduced, drag reduced turbulence. Does anyone know the scaling of, like, some kind of boundary between the regimes? This is what I was.
This plot. No.
Okay, so it's just...
So there's... If you go up this way at zero Reynolds number, there's a whole new family of things.
Yep.
There's some interesting observations, some experimental observations from Bjorn Hoff and computational ones from Yves Debief about what's going on up here. We're in this regime. We're in the dilute solution regime where these things don't.
Okay.
Dilute solution inertia-dominated regime in that regard. In fact, this elasticity number EL is the slope of this.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Good. We'll have Johan go next.